You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, I better bring me up. This is Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. This show was born out of a desire to help guide parents and adolescent services industry professionals alike to professional resources as they face critical moments with their children and or their clients. Today, we're going to explore the newest challenge for educators, the tweens, ages 8 to 12. And our guest today is Scott Smith. Scott is the founder and CEO of Youth Intermedia, which operates Kids Era Magazine, Kids Era Teen News TV, KidsEra.com, and Kids Era Mobile. We're going to discuss with him what his company is doing to help families and to help teens. My co-host today is Logan Clark. Logan?
Hello, Alan. How you doing?
For those of you that have listened to the show, Logan's been on the show before. He is an international investigator and author, and a little later on, we'll be talking to him about his latest book. And at this point, I want to bring Scott up. So, Scott, are you with us? Okay. Try this again. It says the call's on hold.
Scott,
are you with us? Scott, can you hear me?
Well, he might be able to hear you, but we can't hear him.
We can't hear him.
Is there a hold?
Okay, I've taken it off hold. Call on hold.
Scott, if you can hear us, call back.
Scott. Okay, for those that have listened, you've also known that working this particular board is not always my strong suit, so it's a good thing I have a day job. Scott, I've taken it off hold. I think
I'm back.
Yeah. It looks as though we still have you. Let me hit the menu. It says that the call is not on hold anymore.
Uh-huh.
It says if we want to do more, but Scott, can you hear us? It says transfer.
Clear the line and let
okay. Scott? Okay, we're going to clear the line. If you can call us right back, and I'm going to hang up.
Well, I'm sure the audience has really been getting a kick out of this, boy.
Absolutely.
Bust-ass radio.
That's right. well, we're going to be talking about tweens. For those that that have tweens, you know what they are. I have one myself. Tweens are ages 8 to 12. And the way that our world has been marketing to them, they're getting information a whole lot quicker than we did. So we're now in a situation to where commercials are geared towards them. We have television that is geared towards them. And Scott, who has formed a company called Youth Intermedia, is operating directly to them with a great concept. The concept is buy kids for kids. And hopefully we will have him here to tell us a little bit more about that. In the meantime...
By and by.
Yes. Logan, let's talk a little bit about kind of what you're up to or what we're up to at this point.
Well, a couple of things. We're working on... Obviously, we're working on the TV series with
right.
Pierce Brosnan.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a dramatic television series based on my life and world adventures, they say. And also, it would take place when Darnell, my daughter, was 13, 14 years old, like that. Now she's 21. She's on her way, by the way, to Kenya.
Yep, that's right.
And she's going to go over there with a church group and work with the doctors and try to build homes for the poor people over there. I don't know if there's anything but poor people in Kenya.
Yeah, I think you're right.
A lot of work. But that's going really good. Of course, you and I are meeting with good old Edward James Olmos after the show. and talk all to right. him about a potential movie.
Okay, I think we have Scott back.
Oh, great.
Here we
hey,
go.
Hey, Scott.
Scott, this is Alan and Logan. Can you hear us now?
I do hear you now.
All right. right. I can hear the audience screaming.
That's right.
Applauding in the back. Yay!
That's what we need, some sound effects in here.
Oh, yeah. You just suddenly disappeared on me. I heard you come in, and then I don't know what happened.
Well,
that's radio. Welcome to radio.
Yeah, welcome to radio and cell phones and everything else.
Yes.
So, well, I don't know if you could hear, but I mean, we've introduced you. We've told the audience that we're going to talk a little bit about what you're doing with tweens, what Youth Intermedia is doing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that as well?
All right. Well, this is an endeavor that really started back in the mid-90s with a simple magazine that at that time we called it Kids Magazine, and started in the Boulder County School District. And the idea was very simple. We would have children write their own stories, write mm-hmm. their own pieces, and draw their own artwork. And then we would print that in a professional magazine, redistribute it to the classroom, and see what the kids thought of each other's writing. And it quickly turned into a very popular piece. It was conceived of as a literacy program to get children to read and write. And we really didn't have much more of an aspiration than that, but it just took off from there.
Well, I mean, what did you see in the schools that compelled you to start this?
I spent a lot of time volunteering in the schools, and I would volunteer in helping to teach young children to both read and write. And I found that a lot of the material that the children were given to read really wasn't that interesting to the children. It was often adults talking down to the kids. Likewise, the writing assignments that they were given were more adult-oriented in the sense of what did an adult want a child to be writing about, rather than what did the children really want to write about, what was on their mind. And I think that was the idea, that we'd become a voice for children. We'd let children express themselves, and we'd let them guide the editorial content of the magazine. What we found is that, indeed, children have a lot to say, and they are very interested in what each other says. You hear a lot about kids learning from their peers, and there's a lot of truth to that. And it's not just, say, fashions or what's the next great movie to watch, but it comes down to what do they want their parents to let them do? What are the freedoms, that they want to have? How much homework should they have? They have opinions on everything, mm-hmm. and they love to express their opinions.
Scott, out of curiosity to me, everybody else probably knows this, what is a tween?
A tween really is somebody between the ages of 10 and 13, 10 and 12.
Oh.
It's been a word that's been popping up more and more over the last decade, and I think it's come about in partially because kids have become so sophisticated these days. So the 10-year-old of today possesses a lot of the knowledge that a 15-year-old did 10 or 20 years ago. And it was no longer appropriate just to call them kids or children.
No.
So you begin to get some fundamental changes in the way kids think when they start to get into third grade, moving into fourth grade, ages 8 to 9. And they're so different than a child who is, say, 6 years old, that people felt compelled to come up with a new category for them. So they became tweens.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you attribute that to the commercialization? In other words, the amount of information that's being directed to them?
I think it's. I wouldn't just say commercialization. I would say straight information. I mean, these mm-hmm. kids will go online. They'll research subjects. They're politically savvy. Of course, they're savvy consumers, too. But they're also a lot smarter than we were when we were their age. If you take a look at a biology textbook, mm-hmm. for example, that a 10-year-old might be tackling, it has a lot more information in it about genetics than a biology textbook for a high school kid did 20 years ago. So these kids are on information, we might say overload, but they're soaking it up like a sponge. I think they take more information if they were given it. So they're very wise. They're savvy.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned while we were trying to get you back online the concept of buy kids for kids. Why don't you explain how you're doing that and how it's being done in the classroom and how you're tying it now to television, to your website, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, it's back in 95 when we were putting the first magazine together, the words user-generated content or reader-generated content wasn't really known a lot. Likewise, you didn't really have text messaging. You didn't have instant messaging. Not a lot of kids even had email accounts. So you didn't really see it hadn't become blatantly obvious that kids love to communicate each other. You saw it on the playground. You saw it in the classroom. Kids would talk to each other on the phone. They'd get together. But it's really nothing more than an extension of that into new technologies. So the magazine began allowing kids to have their own voice and have that voice heard in front of millions of other kids. That became very significant. We quickly found that our circulation to be over a million and to be in 32 countries across the world.
Wow.
So you had a child, you know, we'd have a child writing from Sri Lanka or from the Czech Republic, from Australia, New Zealand, throughout Asia. And kids in America resonating with what that kid said. Likewise, those kids that we consider to be overseas kids, because we're here in America, resonating to what American kids had to write. And it's not just in the writing, it's also in the artwork. Anime is a huge thing. We mm-hmm. discover trends based upon what these kids are sending in to us, asking us to publish, what they're writing about. And then we find that if we take those trends, what we see, and we publish it, that what resonates with the child will cause a lot more of that type of article to come in. And so we've got our finger on the pulse of kids. What we're doing now is taking that to the next level and moving it into the Internet. Not at all along the lines of giving a kid a Facebook or, mm-hmm. or a website. They can do that already, and they do that a lot. But instead, giving them tools that they can use online to build their own digital world, their own space, and to give them a choice to create content with those tools that they might share just privately with their own friends, or to take that content that they've created with those tools and officially submit it to us for publication on the greater website.
Well, and you know, so, I was saying, when I went to your website, one of the things that I was really impressed with is some of the questions of some of the kids, and I realized by reading those questions, you're allowing these kids to submit it not only to the website or to the magazine, but you're paying them for it.
That's an important piece.
Absolutely. Tell us about that, because I was impressed. In fact, as soon as I saw that, I went and copied it off and gave it to my tween and said, look,
Here you go.
You can be you can not only be publishing your stuff, but you're going to get paid for it. So share a little bit about that. I think not only the parents, but I think they're going to want to take their kids to the site and show them the same thing.
I think so. It's an interesting subject. Just as we were sort of ahead of the curve in the user-generated phenomenon, we were ahead of the curve in along the lines that a kid who's creating content ought to be paid just like any other person who's creating content. If a child becomes a star actor or star singer, they're paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's right.
They're creating content that is valuable to the masses, and it's valuable to the channel they're going through. So there's no different for, you know, we don't have any different perspective. And in fact, what we find is that the kids are very savvy to how much they're being paid.
Mm-hmm.
And we have long differentiated between the price we'll pay for different content. So a simple joke or a riddle, that's not too easy. I mean, that's not too hard to come by, and that might get them $5 or $10. Something more a feature or something that's larger, they could earn $100 or something like
nice.
That. And we find that when we publish a schedule of what we'll pay for different pieces of content, it makes a huge impact as to what the kids will send in. So kids, kids get paid for mowing the lawn. They ought to get paid for creating a piece of artwork that's enjoyed by millions across the world.
Great.
And it definitely drives the quality of the content that we receive up.
Scott, this is Logan. It seems pretty obvious that the internet is the main source behind the fact that kids have changed so much over the last 15 years. There's good, we all know there's good and bad to the internet. What do you think about the weight between the good and the bad, all of the bad things that the internet can do to kids versus the good things? Keeping in mind, one of those is, are they losing, quote, their childhood? I mean, are they not going out and playing, not doing baseball, not doing all the things that, you know, that kids used to do? And are they sitting in front of their computers and or television constantly and losing that childhood?
Well, we have a lot of thoughts on that. We've seen kids changing over the years directly with the material that comes in. And I think there's a real risk. You know, we as adults led a certain life as a child, and we sometimes think that's the way children should live their lives, too. And in fact, it's never been true. As man has progressed over the years, childhood has changed. You know, a child's life 2,000 years ago in Egypt isn't anything like a child's life in America 50 years ago, you know. And nor is a child's life today like a child's life was 10 years ago.
Well, it seems to kind of go back. It seems to kind of go back and forth. In the, you know, in Egypt, way back in Egypt, you know, a 12 or 14 year old child was an adult already and doing things that, you know, I mean, slaves and working and everything else. And then as time went on, hundreds of years, it went back to being kids again.
You bring up a very good point, and really, the child, for most of man's history, has contributed to the family in important ways.
Mm-hmm.
They were hunters, they were gatherers, they helped in the farming. If you read pioneer accounts, part of the reason that school was not year-round was to give kids time off to help with the harvest,
mm-hmm.
you know, to help with agriculture, because they were essential. And this is, I think, that one of the problems that we had in last century was the child moved from being an asset that contributed to the family's well-being and wealth to being a liability. And, you know, that childhood that you're talking about was really an anomaly that existed only for so many decades, in a period of time when they stopped being producers and they moved to just being dependents, and they didn't move into the workforce till later on. So as technology has increased and the ability to do things has improved, you find that an increasing number of children are moving back into the ability to be producers, to actually create things. Whether they're creating things and having to earn their entire living and the family is dependent upon it, or whether they're creating things as the beginning of what will be their career, that's still kind of a gray area. But part of what we want to do is to advance getting children these digital tools where they can create artwork, mm-hmm. they can create music, they can create geographic information, they can really create their own world online. And in some ways, the internet, the tools that are on the internet have lagged other tools, which is kind of an ironic concept. But the truth is, I think adults have been a little slow to catch on to the fact that the kids love the internet because it gives them so many opportunities. Why don't we exploit that instead and create real opportunities for them where they're able to build things online that have true meaning to those kids? So that's part of what we want to do. We're creating a we're creating a music composer, for example, that allows kids to create their own music online. They don't have to have a traditional music education, nor do they have to have a lot of the traditional music talent. Instead, certain programming skills allow them to create techno and rock music that in many instances will be indistinguishable between what a professional is producing in the studio. Again, it's because it's a tool that we're dedicated to creating that allow kids to have this ability. Will adults like that tool? Of course they will. But these, I think we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. I think these types of tools that we're conceiving, we're not going to be the only ones that conceive this. This is just going to be a growing phenomena, and you're going to find that kids are able to contribute to the world again in a way that was analogous to the how they contributed to the world for 99% of man's history. They were important. They were assets. So we're hoping to allow kids to become assets again rather than liabilities.
Well, I love that idea, that concept. Now, one of the things that I think a lot of people run into is their kids already know more than them about the computer. So I know that we have, right. And absolutely, because I deal with parents where...
Depends on the parent's ego.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, I mean, we end up dealing with parents that, you know, in asking them questions about, you know, about their computer and things like that, before they can answer it, they have to go get their 11-year-old, you know. Well, I don't know. Let me get my 11-year-old because they can show me how to do that. So, yeah.
The kids also established the consumer trends of the future. Kids were first to adopt text messaging. Most adults that I know now use text messaging regularly in business. Most of them learned it from their kids.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I have. What amazes me, absolutely blows my mind, is that someone I can call. Business people, I can call them and they will not answer their phone. But if I send them a text, they all answer it immediately.
Exactly.
Instead of answering the phone, instead of saying hello, they'll actually text a message.
See, text messaging is a useful technology. However, my point is that kids discovered it first.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure.
And they are the ones that helped commercialize it. Same for Google. Google was really discovered by young people, all the way from kids to maybe people in their late teens. But Google really owes its existence to the fact that teenagers discovered it, began to use it, and began to promote it to their parents and promote it to each other. So in many respects today, children are creating the trends that are out there. In terms of a lot of studies we've seen, in terms of which computer the family buys, the kids are the ones that know the best. You know, which cell phone should you buy? Which cell phone service should you sign up for? The kids already know. You know, they know which ones have the proper packages for data and text, and they'll tell their parents. We're finding that, like the light bulbs that are energy efficient, kids take the lead on suggesting to their parents. They heard about it at school. They say, "Mom, why don't you buy this instead? I just saw that it happened in a Target store a few weeks ago. The mother was about to buy the traditional light bulb, and her daughter, who appeared to be maybe 10, 11 years old, said, no, these are much more efficient. And she picked up one of those bulbs, and her mom bought it. Mm-hmm. So the kids are leading trends in many respects, and the more information we can give them and the more tools we can give them, the more creative they're going to be, and the better off our world is. because they tend to make pretty good choices. They're not.
Well, you're giving them. Life. You're giving them a lot of platforms. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Giving them a lot of platforms and giving them a lot of trust. So, insofar as the danger of the internet, kids are very savvy about that. They understand what's going on, and they make and if you sit and interview them, you'll find out that they generally know the risks and the rewards better than their own parents.
Right, who are paranoid.
So I don't worry about kids online. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, and the parents are paranoid. The kids aren't paranoid.
Yeah. Right, right.
Well, Scott, in the future, I mean, how is Youth Intermedia engaging kids on a global level? In other words, tell us, you know, you've talked about, I mean, what you're doing is cutting edge. What's your next step?
Well, I think that the website Kidzera that we're developing is going to be a very exciting platform that will come up, because these same tools that we're talking about, where they can create music or create art, we have another one in development in which kids can put themselves on the map. So in other words, in the magazine, we had a section called World Focus, mm-hmm. and kids from overseas would write about what their life was like, maybe their family life, school life, what sports they had, but it was very much geography from the viewpoint of the kids. Well, we'd like to extend that using Google Earth. We would have bubbles throughout the world that you could zoom in on, and each of the bubbles represents the story of a kid. Again, user-generated, edited by us, submitted to us, and only the best get on board, so the quality of the experience for the viewer is enhanced. Mm-hmm. But it becomes a tremendous competition. Then you want to maybe put yourself on the map. You do a good enough job, and you get on the map. Well, you can imagine the impact of children reading about each other and being able to navigate that physical-looking world and see what kids are thinking and doing all over the world, what they're thinking about politics, what they're thinking about the environment, what they're thinking about technology, about their hopes, their aspirations, and their fears. These kids will learn about each other as if they're next-door neighbors, as if they're mm-hmm. peers. And that shrinks the world dramatically, and it sharpens the focus on what are the global realities out there, and what does the future need to look like. So those types of tools are the tools that we are very excited to be bringing to the table this fall.
Well, one of the tools
I think that...
Sorry. One of the tools you just mentioned that I like is you mentioned the fact that it's a competition. You know that they have to raise the bar to get on. I think that is incredibly positive, and it sort of goes opposite of what our public school system is doing, which is okay. We're not going to have it to where if you exceed a certain level that you're going to have greater benefit. They want to kind of make everybody the same. And so I love the fact that you're doing that, and I hope that nobody tries to change that, because I think that's very important also, is to continue to raise the bar. That way they are all going to get better. They're going to be sending better material. They're going to be writing better. They're going to be taking better pictures. They're going to be communicating better. I like what it is you were saying, but that particular component I think is also very important.
I think it is too, and if you look at kids' love of playing computer games,
mm-hmm.
Whether they're playing against themselves or against somebody else, it's a completely competitive environment, and kids thrive in that. You want to give the kids level playing fields. You want to give them all the tools that you can. But if you give them things without having bars that they have to get over, they gain nothing out of it. I mean, we humans inherently become very lazy if we're just gifted things, you know. And we live, if you look around and look at nature, you see it's an incredibly competitive environment, and yet it's also a very rich environment. You know, you having a competitive environment with the proper tools means you have opportunity, and that's what all we want to do is provide kids with opportunity, and again, showcasing the best of the best, and creating a competitive environment helps all the kids all the way across the board. Again, I point out that we'll provide them with their own private space.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to create their own tools and their own content in that space. But if they want that content to be viewed by millions, then they're going to have to do a good job of it. Again, we respect not only selecting the best, but editing it and mm-hmm. putting it in a professional environment. That's what I think a lot of the popular user-generated sites do not have right now.
Right.
They kind of turn into a cesspool of mediocrity. That's really not fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you happen to know this person, you might enjoy their page. But it's not a lot of fun just to view page after page because there's too much mediocrity. And that's what publishing is all about. You know, we've not lost that publishing roots, which is you take the creme de la creme and you put it out there in front for everyone else. And guess what it does? It gives the masses ideas for further development. And they all run back to their composers and they say, wow, I see what that could do. That's cool. Suddenly their own products have increased in quality as a result of it.
Right. And then can the parents feel comfortable that when they allow their child to go to your website, that, you know, that there's not going to be, in other words, how is it screened to the point to where they know that there's not going to be content that they really don't want their tweens or teens viewing?
That's, again, one of the benefits of editing.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that gets on the public part of our website is material that we've seen, that we've put in a really nice format, cleaned up a little if it needs cleaning up, you know, and put in a professional format so it's enjoyable and it's high quality. So we have total control over that ultimate content. So in other words, what we do is we enable the masses, if you will, to create, and then we take the best of what they create. Within a child's own private site, nobody's going to go to that site unless they give their friend that address. And
okay,
if
good.
Somehow or other that gets compromised in any sort of way, they can start over. They
mm-hmm.
come up with a new name, and they hand it out to the ones that they want, and they've started all over. So it gives instant protection in all sorts of ways.
Okay.
Likewise, even in the child's private site that they control, there still can be filters and various controls that if something happens that it's out of the ordinary, that's not acceptable, someone can alert us, or our own crawlers will find it. And if somebody abuses the opportunity we give them, we simply turn off their world.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to take that chance.
Well, give us the website, and for those of you out there, I mean, you can log in right now. You can be looking at this website, while you're hearing us. So, Scott, can you give the website out there?
Certainly. It's kids and an era, KIDZERA.com. Now, it is under construction at this stage, so we've agreed to come on this show to let you know a little bit about what's going to be available this fall. So you can take a look at it now, check it out every couple of weeks. You'll see it begin to blossom, and the true launch will be September the 1st of
okay.
this year. At that stage, we'll have 1 million copies of the Kids Era magazine go out, and then our TV partner, which is Kids Teen News, again, a program in which teenagers do all the anchor work and all the reporting. We will all join forces, and we will promote what is on the kidsera.com, promote kids to go there and create their own material. And then not only is the creme de la creme then showcased, will it be showcased on kidsera.com, but it'll also appear on TV in front of another 9 million kids, and in our magazine, which goes in front of 4 million children. So it's going to be quite the synergistic combination.
Well, Scott, I'm looking forward to the launch. In fact, let me ask you now, as we get closer, so maybe in September when the launch is out, can we get you back on the show?
You know, I'd love to do that, and I think we'll have a lot of fun things to talk about because it's that content that kids create that's really interesting. And looking through past issues of the magazine, it's just fabulous what they create, and what they'll be creating online, I think, will be even more fabulous, and we'll have a lot of fun stories to tell.
Well, sounds like it. Let's do this. Let's for September, let's get you and maybe one of your teen or tween anchors on, and get their view as well.
You know, I think that we could come up with something exciting there if we put a question out to the kids. And gave them the opportunity to be on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say the 10 best answers that come in, you'd have quite the dynamic little show there with those kids speaking mm-hmm. their mind. You can just imagine what that'd be like.
Well, good. Well, I look forward to that. Thank you so much for coming on with us. And again, for anybody out there, go and check out, put your comments in. That's kids, KIDZERA.com. Okay, kidsera.com. Go there, check it out. It sounds like they want your opinions, so check out that site. Give them your opinion. Scott, again, thank you, and we will look forward to talking to you again.
You're welcome.
All right.
Yeah, thank you, too. It was enjoyable talking to you all, and I look forward to
further
discussions.
All right.
Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Now, we're going to take a break. We're going to go to a quick commercial. We will be back with Logan Clark, and we're going to talk a little bit about his new book.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
We're back, and I'm here with Logan Clark, and I'm going to start out by reading a quote from his latest book. The book is called Last Night an Angel Stopped By. And here is a quote. Lying in the extreme care room of a hospital, a man overhears a conversation between a dying woman and an angel. The amazing truths he hears challenge and inspire him. To read this story is to encounter eternal questions and come away with a sense of peace, joy, love, and above all, wonder. And that is a quote from Martha Lawrence, the author of the Elizabeth Chase novels. Logan, tell us about Last Night an Angel Stopped By.
Well, it was written in 2000, I believe, and it's available on Amazon.com. And it is, I had had a pretty serious accident, and I wound up in the hospital in the intensive care room after surgery. I went straight into surgery, and when I came out, I was in the ICU ward, and next to me, there was only two beds, a small town. Up in the mountains, and next to me was an elderly woman who was obviously at the end, you know, of her life, and quite content. And it was just amazing. I spoke to her for quite a while, just about being there, and she seemed to know that she was dying. And in the middle of the night, I was awoken, and I don't know how to describe it, just the most bizarre experience, you know, in my life. And I've had some pretty bizarre ones. There was an angel there conversing with her about leaving this, you know, this earth.
Well, let me ask you one of the questions that actually a flight attendant asked me. I've passed out many of these books to friends who have lost someone, and the feedback has been incredible. But one of the questions, I gave this to a flight attendant I was on a very long flight, and she came back to me. She actually sat down and read it. She came back to me about an hour and a half later, and with just the look on her face was, oh my God, is this all true? So let's put it to you. Is it all true?
It's not all true, but 90% of it is true. There is some literary stuff I put in naturally to try to, you know, complete a story. But it 90%, the woman was there. We had the conversation. She died. The angel was there, or the vision, whatever it was there. And I heard the conversation. And how I remembered it all, I don't know. Even as I was lying there in the hospital after she passed on, I remembered verbatim things that the angel said to the woman, said to Betty. And it was as real as anything I can, you know, call or say. I mean, certainly I was on drugs and everything because of coming out of ICU. But it seemed to be pretty clear to me. I mean, I actually conversed, and when I woke up the next morning, she was gone. They rolled the mattress mm-hmm. up, and she was gone. There's some really bizarre things that happened. But well, so 90% of it is true.
Well, I've known you for a long time. I mean, for those out there, I mean, I've known Logan for 30 years. You're not the person that most of us would think would have a visit from an angel.
No, there's a few other guys that might come visit me, but not angels. Yeah, that was probably the most shocking thing. When I wrote the book, people that did know me said they... In fact, the odd thing was it made them believe it even more. Mm-hmm. They felt more sure of what the content was because... I'm not a holy roller. I'm not organized religion. I am, you know, I'm just not somebody that an angel would come down or, you know, a vision. And you just don't think so, because anybody that knows me would think that I'd be a smartass to them or something. Or I would, you know, I'd tell them to leave or something. I don't know. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe that's mm-hmm. the reason it happened. You know, like on the one of the reviews that's on the back, which I really liked, someone said it, about the book, it's a fly on the wall spiritual experience of a lifetime for the millions who seek more than organized religion has to offer. And that's mm-hmm. really what the book, I mean, it didn't change me. It reconfirmed things that I believed all my life, things my mom taught me. And I'm just not really, you know, I'm not, right. I'm pretty anti very organized religion, especially the holy rollers on television and everything. And this whole experience sort of confirmed that.
Well, I mean, besides the obvious amazement of seeing an angel and hearing them talk, what impressed or amazed you the most about this experience?
I think the fact that the angel was expressing to Betty that we were all God's children, and it didn't matter what church, it didn't matter whether you were Muslim, whether you were Buddhist, or whatever you were, that you're all God's children, and that that she actually sounded sad and hurt about the people, like in the Philippines that I told you. And she actually mentioned in countries, I have seen this, where they, on Easter, this person carries the cross over their shoulders, huge cross, and hundreds of people trail behind him, the Easter celebration, and the finale, when he gets to where he's going, they literally nail this man to the cross. I'm talking real nails through his hands, through his feet. In fact, there are almost holes in his hands. The nails go back in the same place every year. And to think, Amanda, the angel, spoke about to think that God wants people to do that, you know, to suffer like that just to get close to him is pretty sad. I mean, it's almost to a sick point. That amazed me that she was aware of that. Mm-hmm. You know, that she wasn't there saying, you must do all these things. She wasn't there backing up the church and saying, if you don't do this, you'll go to hell. If you do this, if you do that, if you do this, you'll get in. You know, like the secret code. Mm-hmm. She was actually against that. That there's, you know, I asked, or Betty, I asked Betty earlier, but she asked me, she asked Amanda, is there a secret, you know, is there a certain prayer you have to say to get in? Is there a certain Bible you have to read to get into heaven? What if you don't read?
Okay, wait, and describe the, because you've just mentioned them by name, as far as, now, which one is in the bed?
Betty, the elder woman was Betty.
Betty is an elderly woman, she's in the bed, and Amanda is the angel.
Is the angel.
And Amanda, did you give that name to the angel, or did the angel give that name to you?
No, Betty, she told Betty, you can call me Amanda.
Okay. Okay, well, in reading, okay, on page 15, when the nurse comes in the room, you know, in the middle of all this happening, what did you think? I mean, because it seems like she didn't see anything going on. Didn't that make you think, maybe this isn't happening? Maybe I'm hallucinating?
Yeah, it did. But I don't, she came in as though, I was awake. I was laying there. She didn't look at me as though I was awake. She looked at Betty as though she was asleep, even though the angel was standing there. Although you could tell the angel wasn't, I mean, it wasn't like a physical presence of a person standing there. Now, I knew I couldn't reach out and touch her, okay? I don't know what you call that. But, yeah, it did. Several things made me question it. And I always kept thinking, well, maybe it's the drugs, maybe it's this. But where would all this come from? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. if it was the drugs, and if you read the book, at the end of the book, you realize that it did happen, because certain things happen at the end of the book that pretty much locked down that it was, I mean, almost mm-hmm. the dun, 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 you know, where at the end, and yeah, you got to read the book, you know, go on Amazon.com.
Well, and I was just going to ask that, and so that in case we run short of time, again, tell everybody how they can get the book.
You just go on Amazon.com, Last Night an Angel Stopped By, put that in as the title, or put Logan Clark, which is C-L-A-R-K-E, there's an E at the end of it. If you put either one of those in, it'll come up along with the first book I wrote, which was Just Passing Through.
Okay. Now, if they go to a Barnes or Noble or something like that, can they order it for them?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they go to Barnes & Noble. In fact, I believe it's on Barnes & Noble website. I'm not sure. It might be on Barnes & Noble also. But, yeah, you can go in and order it at Barnes & Noble and the other major one.
Right. So I have to try to think of the other one. Walden Books?
Yeah. And Last Night an Angel Stopped By. And there's a photograph on the cover. If you look at that photograph of those clouds.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a real photograph, untouched, not computer generated or anything. There was a woman driving in Taos, New Mexico, her and her husband, an elderly woman, and she saw this cloud in the sky that was about the size of two football fields, and it was an angel. And as you look at it, it is an angel flying in the air on this cloud that's at least two football fields, maybe three football fields. And she pulled over to the side of the road along with about a dozen other cars that were there, with all of these people standing looking up in the sky with their mouths open at this angel cloud. And she took a picture of it. And it appeared in a magazine, in an angel magazine, in a tiny little picture, maybe like a smaller than a passport picture. And I hunted her, being a detective. I found her, talked to her, and bought the rights to the photograph and put on the cover.
And I'll tell you, if you, for whatever reason, I mean, you don't go to Amazon.com or whatever, and you don't get the book, okay, if you contact us at Answers for the Family, answers4thefamily.com, let us know. We can put it up on our website. We can put the picture up. We can put a couple of quotes out of the book up, you know, if you want to learn a little bit more about it. But I can tell you, it's a great read. It's a quick read. And I had another thought, which was, I heard a story, I mean, that a minister at a church in a small town used your book for his entire sermon, and not in a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Share a little bit about that.
It was actually in my hometown, the town we lived in, 14,000 people. My daughter and my ex-wife, at that time my wife, went to this church on a regular basis. I didn't go to the church once in a while. And he, when the book came out, he waited until we went to Hawaii on vacation, and knowing that my daughter wouldn't be in the church and my wife wouldn't be in there, and he used it for his entire one-hour sermon. And he said that, I believe an angel visited this man's room, but it was a dark angel, you know, it was the devil. And the reason that he went on this rant of 1 hour is because of two things that are said in the book. And one of them is that Amanda said, unfortunately, what did it say? It said, unfortunately, a lot of these churches are more concerned about raising funds rather than raising spiritual awareness. That really ticked them off. And the other thing that said, there's many paths to God. And he interpreted that, I guess, as Muslims and Jewish people or whoever still could get to God. And he didn't think that that was right. There was only one. It was only Jesus. And so he used this for the entire hour. Well, somebody tape recorded. The guy tape recorded all of his things. People walked out of the church. He lost parishioners because they were friends of ours. They were really insulted with what he did. And during the tape, when I listened to the one-hour tape, the thing that was really mad about was the money thing. The saying the churches want the money. Six times during my listening to the tape, he passed the plate and asked for collections.
Wow.
Six times. But the book sold out in the town as soon as he did it. And he had apologized to me. Another minister got involved. It was a mess.
Well, and we're about out of time, but I mean,
and Robert Schuller of the Crystal Cathedral wrote me a letter saying it was a fabulous book. He loved it. So you know, it's I guess controversy. Really, you get into religion or politics, and there's going to be a controversy,
right?
No matter what,
somebody's going to disagree.
Yeah, if you look for something that if you think organized religion is a little too closed or a lot too close-minded, read this book. It'll relieve you. And if anybody has passed on in your life, read this book. It will help you so much. Soldiers, families have written us. AIDS patients, families have written us tremendously about how much it helps them. Wow. But it lets you know that you know you don't need that church. You don't need to go in there to have. And I'm not saying it's bad. It's a good thing for billions of people. But you do not have to be in a $1 million church with $80,000 stained glass windows and $1 million gold crosses to get to God.
Well, and I was just going to add, when you mentioned the part about anybody who has lost someone, I've personally given this book to many people and gotten some very, very heartfelt, really positive feedback on how it helped them get through the grief of losing someone. Mm-hmm. So, yes, again, you can go to Amazon.com. It's Last Night an Angel Stopped by Logan Clark. And, Logan, any last thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with?
It's like I say, it really confirmed to me. It made me feel a lot better. I worried less, you know, about, you know, God, am I doing the right thing or wrong thing? You know, you always wonder about that. And I relaxed so much after reading it, knowing that there wasn't some Boy Scout secret handshake. I know that sounds petty, but that's what it comes down to. Some Boy Scout secret handshake to get into heaven. You know, there's not. It's not a trick that only the church knows.
All right. Thanks for being here, folks. Again, we really appreciate the fact that you are out there, that you are listening. You can go to latalkradio.com to listen to us. You can to listen live. You can listen to the shows after they've been archived on the blog at answersforthefamily.com. That's answersforthefamily, the numeral 4.com. Have a great week. We're out of here.
Goodbye.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk. Right here on LA Talk Radio.